You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio on WTMR 800, Camden, Philadelphia.
Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid. Dear brothers and sisters, the Holy Spirit is with you.
I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love.
And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host for the next hour, Ken Johnston, and I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. You know, through your prayerful and financial support, you've kept us on the air for over 40 years now. We can't thank you enough for that, and just ask that you continue to do what you can so that we can bring you great shows like today's. Our guest is already on the line. Before we go to Father, one announcement that the healing retreat is taking place in Edmiston, New York. So if you can get up to New York this weekend, it's May 20th to the 22nd. Kathleen McCarthy will be on hand as the retreat director. Her good friend, Father Dermot Roche, will be on hand to handle all the sacramental activities that go on over the course of the weekend. The best bet would be to call this number if you're interested in going. You want to get in touch with Rosie, and Rosie's number is 607-206-2523. That's 607-206-2523. Or if you need to, give Maureen a call here, and I'm sure Maureen can put you in touch with Kathleen or Rosie or whoever we need to in order to get you registered for this weekend, if there's any availability. I know it's being live streamed. I believe there's a cost involved to view it, but you may be able to just watch it from the comfort of your home here in the Philadelphia area. So, without any further ado, we're joined today by Father John Hotze. And Father is the Episcopal Delegate for the Cause for Beatification of Father Emil Capon, meaning that he spearheads the Wichita Diocese role on the Bishop's behalf. Welcome to the show, Father. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And we only had a moment to talk before we came on the air, and I had mentioned to you that, you know, I knew nothing about Father Emil Capon until about 24 hours ago, and read some of the material that I was given, looked up some of the stuff on the internet, and the show that I do in the previous hour with the friend of mine, Father Doug McKay, we talk about it's called Saints and Sinners, and we talk about the saints in the liturgical calendar. So these are all people that have already been canonized for the most part.
Right.
And Father Emil is in this process, and to read about the heroic virtue of this man was just incredible. And you know far more about him than I do, but he hails from I guess north of Wichita. Is that right?
Yeah, a small town called Pilsen, Kansas. It's about an hour north of Wichita.
Very good. And he would study for ordination, become a priest, and then at some point, I guess he decides that he'd like to be a military chaplain.
Right. He was ordained in 1940. And if you think about the times, that was just a couple years before the United States got involved in World War II. But when he was assigned, or when he was ordained, he was assigned back to his home parish there in Pilsen, Kansas. Pilsen's a farming community. It's also a Czech community. Almost everybody that lived there at the time were of the Czech lineage. And Father Capon himself was of a Czech. Actually, his mother was 100% Czech. His father was half Czech and half German. So literally, he was basically Czech there and growing up there in Pilsen also. After he was ordained, like you say, in 1940, one of the things that he did was help out at the Harrington Air Base, which was about 10 miles away from Pilsen, Kansas. The Harrington Air Base was a training place for men that were in the military or that were in joining the Army so that they would get some kind of basics of training on airplanes. So he would go there and he would help out there with the sacraments. And that was the first taste he had of the military life. When World War II broke out, he did ask the Bishop of Wichita at the time, Bishop Winkleman, if he might be released and go to become an Army chaplain there in World War II. And he was finally able to go. I mean, he served over in the India and Burma theaters, but that was about 1944, towards the end of the war. And actually, when he got there, most of the fighting was over there in that part of the world that he was sent. But he still had a great influence on the people there. When he began to be a chaplain, he got the name of a soldier's chaplain. And I asked, actually, it was a Navy man that explained to me what a soldier's chaplain was. And he said it was just what soldiers called the chaplain that was willing to go out and to be with them at the front lines. And that was certainly Father Capon. He never shied away from being at the front lines because he believed that's exactly where the men needed him the most. And I was able to talk to his Jeep driver at that time. And he told me that it was almost kind of like a running joke there with Father Capon there. Where they were situated was out in the jungle. And he said while most of the fighting was over, he said there were always pockets of resistance. And he said it would just be soldiers that would stumble upon these pockets of resistance. And he said you would find out or you'd know that it was happening because you would hear gunfire. And with Father Capon and his Jeep driver, his Jeep had been shot out from under him on two different occasions. And he was currently without a Jeep. So Father Capon had acquired a bicycle. And he said it was almost comical because he said whenever they would hear fire or gunfire break out, he said everybody would kind of stop and look around the camp to see where Father Capon was. Because invariably he would be on his bicycle riding off through the jungle to where he heard the gunfire, because he truly believed that's where he was needed the most. And he said that's why they gave him the name of being a soldier's chaplain, was because he was always willing to be there with his men.
So that
started off early with his heroics in the military.
No, and that's a special calling. A local parish here, we've got a new pastor who spent 28 years as a military chaplain in there. They're a different breed of men. I often think when we talk about, priests that end up in these kind of situations, I think of Maximilian Kolbe, not so much that he was a chaplain, but obviously arrested and then taken to Auschwitz. But what God does with these men, and you especially as a priest, I would think would confirm that, you know, most of what you're able to do is not because of your own effort, but certainly what God is able to do through you. And, you know, we thank you and all your brother priests for their yes and their willingness to, you know, serve their lives as a persona Christi, as Christ in flesh for us. And so, and I'm sure Father Emil will be the first to say that it wasn't of him, but, you know, the strength that he received from God and perhaps even, you know, that personal direction to, when you hear the gunfire, get on the bike and go, Emil. And
exactly.
You know, the bravery that he had certainly would come from God. But it's that yes that we're all asked to give. And some of these guys just give it in a really heroic way.
Right, right. And just kind of as a sidelight, this would have been during the Korean War, which he served also. One of his commanding officers was speaking about Father Capon, and in the process of getting paperwork and doing all of the investigation for sainthood, one of the things that we looked for were for not necessarily miraculous events, but for him to be able to do, or him doing kind of supernatural events. One of the things would be like bilocation. And one of the men that was working with me on the historical committee had done a timeline, and on this timeline he had written down everything that we had determined or that we had found about Father Capon and what he was doing on what day and what year or what time. Excuse me. And he asked me if there was ever a question as to whether or not Father Capon could bilocate, being in two different places at the same time. And I told him that it had never really come up before. And I kind of asked him, and he said, well, he said, in this timeline, he said, there aren't really times that things kind of overlapped. So he said, it isn't really that he would be bilocating, but he said, there's just so much there. And he said, it would be very difficult for any one man to be able to accomplish all of these things that we knew that he accomplished, because it was one event right after another event, right after another event, right after another event. So I was always kind of keeping that in my mind. And at one time with his commanding officer, I was speaking to him, and I had asked him a question, I mean, whether or not he had ever witnessed any supernatural events. And he said, well, I don't know if you could call this a supernatural event, but he said, I often wondered if he slept. And I said, oh, and he said, yeah, he said, there were a couple of, or he said, there were several occasions that he was kind of struck. And he said, one situation that comes to mind is, he said, we were in our camp, and he said, I knew that there was going to be a battle the next day. And he said, we were all geared up for this battle. And he said that all the men were bedded down and were asleep. And he said that he was not able to sleep. And he said that often happens. And he was nervous on the days before battles and things like that. And he said he was just walking around the camp. And he said, and then he noticed that there was a light on in the camp where there shouldn't have been a light. And so he said he went to investigate to see what it was. And he said he went, and he said there was a small hut. And he said that he just kind of looked in the window. And he said Father Capon was in there, and he was writing letters. And one of the things that he was known for was writing letters, and especially writing letters home. And he made sure that he always wrote home to those that had died, or to the families of those that had died in battle. And that's what he was doing, was writing letters home to these parents or loved ones of those that had died. So he said he went in and he talked to them, and he just told him, he said, Chaplain, I think you need your sleep. And he said, oh, that he would get to that as soon as he was through with these letters, and he was just finishing them up. But he said that happened on numerous occasions. And he said that it just struck him with him always being up, the first man up in the morning, the last man to go to bed at night, and then instances in which he knows that he did not go to bed at night but was staying up and doing other things. And he said he just always wondered whether or not he needed to sleep. And, I mean, that was something that we'd never be able to prove, but I do think it was rather interesting. I mean, when he was telling me this, and when you look at it in terms of whether or not he was given supernatural gifts, I mean, he may very well have been, and we just don't know, and we would never be able to prove it. But certainly, as you said, I mean, learning about his heroic virtues, I mean, with his heroic virtues, it certainly could include ideas or instances in which he was given some supernatural gift to be able to accomplish some of those virtues that he was so readily able to accomplish.
It makes perfect sense. And there's some other saints that I think died way before their time because of their extreme fasting, in the case of somebody like Francis right. of Assisi, and, you know, because of the way they led their lives may have brought about an earlier demise, and eventually they were probably so close to God that they had really nothing else to live for on this planet. But but Father Emil would die rather young, and so maybe God saw fit that he didn't need all that sleep to preserve his body, that he wasn't going to need him for a very long time. So
could very well be.
Yeah. So he spent his time, like you said, in Burma and India, and then World War II would ramp up. He would come home for a little bit after that.
Yeah. Yep. After World War II, he came back home to the Diocese of Wichita. And at that time, we had another bishop, a Bishop Carroll. And Bishop Carroll decided that he would send him off for further studies using the GI Bill. So he was sent to Catholic University. And there at Catholic University, he got a degree in education and a minor degree in history. So he was coming back to the diocese, and he kind of assumed that he would be assigned to one of the diocesan high schools. Well, as all priests will attest to, bishops have their own mind. They often don't do what you expect them to do. And he was assigned back to his home parish once again. At this time, he was assigned back there because his pastor, Monsignor Sklenar, was of retirement age. So he was going to be assigned back to his home parish as pastor back in Pilsen, Kansas. And when the bishop assigned him, one of the things that always bothered him about being assigned back to his home parish was whether or not he could minister to the people. He was of the opinion that since he grew up there, that, for example, people that needed to go to confession might always kind of be leery about coming to him to confession because, I mean, he was a native son. Right. I mean, and everybody knew who he was. Pilsen's a very small community, so everybody would have known who Father Capon was. They would have grown up with his family. I mean, his family was still in the area, and he always felt that people might be apprehensive about confessing their sins to somebody that they knew so well. So that always bothered him. And it kind of bothered him so much. I mean, it was kind of a humorous story. There at the church in Pilsen, they did have a grade school, but it was the public grade school, although it was staffed by the Precious Blood nuns out of the convent in Wichita. So they were receiving a Catholic education before they would go to or before they would have their regular school classes. So they would often go or they would schedule times for the children to go to confession. And Monsignor Sklenar would always take the confessional that was at the back of the church. And then Father Capon had set up a kneeler with a little prie-dieu there up at the altar. With a screen so that the kids could go behind the screen. Well, there are several occasions when he was out doing other things and was late in coming to hear their confessions. So when he would come in, all the kids and stuff would already be there in the pews. And so one of the kids, an adult now, I mean, said that what he would do when he would come in late is he would take out his hanky or take a handkerchief out of his pocket, and he would take that and he would hold it up in front of his face and use that to walk up through the church up to where his little station for to hear confessions. And he said he would do that to show the kids that he wasn't looking to see who was out there. That they would still be able to go to confession in secret and without him knowing who it was. But I kind of laughed at the thought of Father Capon walking through the church with a handkerchief over his face so that others might realize that he wasn't going to pay attention to who was coming to him for confession. I just thought it was kind of funny. But again, it showed where Father Capon's heart was. I mean, he was there for the people that he served, and he was going to do everything that he could to make sure that he served them the best he could. But anyway, with his confessions, I mean, he went back to the bishop and kind of explained to the bishop why he was apprehensive about going back to his home parish and why he thought he wouldn't be adequate to be a good pastor there. And the bishop understood what he was saying, and he told him that he felt that if he felt that it was that big of a difficulty, that they would find something else for him to do. So during that time, when he had come back from Catholic University, he assigned him to several other parishes. And at this time, the Diocese of Wichita was the entire southern half of Kansas. So it was twice the size as what the diocese is now. So for a while, he would travel from parish to parish or go to several different parishes where the priests were needing vacations or when he had to fill in with for other people and things like that. And he was finally assigned to a parish in Timken, Kansas. Timken, Kansas was another Czech community. So he was assigned there, hopefully to become pastor there in Timken. Well, right before he got there, the church burned down. So they were there without a church. The church that had burnt down did have a basement, and they were able to kind of put a roof over the basement and use it for their church while Father Capon was there. But much of his time that he spent there in Timken was in preparing the site for a new church. I mean, he would get out there and he would get out his wheelbarrow and move dirt and move rocks and things like that so that they would be able to get construction going as soon as they were able to. So again, doing what needed to be done so the people of God could be served. One of the men in Timken, Kansas, for those that aren't familiar with farming and farm communities, almost all farming communities have a co-op, which is a place where the farmers go to get supplies and where ultimately a lot of them sell their grain and things like that through the co-op. One of the men I interviewed was a man that owned the co-op or ran the co-op, was a manager of the co-op. And he said, you know, Father Capon left Timken when he was accepted back into the military. And I'll tell that story in just a minute. But he said, you know, he said, I respected the man greatly. And he said this man was not a Catholic. But he said, I was never so glad to have him be moved than when he was moved or when he went back to the military. And I said, oh, I said, well, if you respected him, why were you glad he moved? And he said, because I knew if he had stayed, he said, I would have had to have become a Catholic because of how good of a man this was. Yeah. And he said, I didn't know that I could be a Catholic. So he said, when they moved him, he said, that got that off of my chest. So he said, I didn't have to become a Catholic because this man that he knew what he would have to follow into Catholicism had been moved. So another story of Father Capon. But anyway, when he was there in Timken, the military had put out a call for chaplains to return to the military. Right after World War II, so many of them left, they found themselves kind of in dire straits for chaplains once again. So the military put out a call for some of those that had gone to return if they were able to. So he sent a letter to Bishop Carroll asking that he might return to the chaplaincy. And at first, Bishop Carroll ignored him. And about 6 months later, after not hearing anything about him, he sent another letter to Bishop Carroll. And that time, Bishop Carroll did respond. And he told him that he would allow him to re-enlist. So he re-enlisted in the military from Pilsen. It would have been, let's see, the Christmas of 1948 would have been when he left the Wichita Diocese for the last time. From Wichita, I mean, it was December 26th that he left the diocese. He had stayed, was able to be in Christmas with his family. And then he came down to the cathedral and visited with Bishop Carroll. And from there, he went to Fort Bliss, Texas. At Fort Bliss, Texas, another story of somebody that needed to become a Catholic because they had known Father Capon. He was there at Fort Bliss. About half of Fort Bliss had been shut down after World War II, and they were reopening it. Well, the place where he was at was part that it had shut down, and he was assigned to a cabin. And he said that knowing Western Texas and the dirt and dust and things, when he got to his cabin, it was about knee deep in dirt. So he spent the first days there shoveling out his cabin, as were other people that were coming back and going into the service. A man named Ezra Barkley was assigned to be his roommate there in this small cabin. So when Ezra Barkley got to Fort Bliss, he too had served in World War II and had been called back to duty. And they told him that he was going to have to serve with he was going to have to live with a Catholic chaplain. And he refused. He said, "I won't do it." And they told him, he said, "Well, you have your choice. You can either bunk with this Catholic chaplain or you can sleep in the gutter because we have no place for you." So he said that he begrudgingly went to this little cabin that he was supposed to live in with Father Capon. He said he opens the door and he said he walks in and he said, "What do I see right when I walk in the door?" He said, "There is this huge picture of the Blessed Virgin Mary." And he said, "What now?" He said, "Was thinking, what have I gotten myself into?" So anyway, he settled down and he moved in with Father Capon. Ezra Barkley did not go over to Korea, whereas Father Capon did go to Korea. So they separated or went separate ways. But before they went their separate ways, Ezra Barkley had become a Catholic and he had married a Catholic woman. Father Capon had brought him into the church and had witnessed the marriage between he and his Catholic wife. And he said that he had never met a man finer than Father Capon.
Wow.
So much so that when they had heard that Father Capon had died during the Korean War, he said that both he and his wife were just devastated. Mm-hmm. Because of this news. And he said, as it turned out, he said after the war, or after the Korean War was over, he said he had duties in the military, but just around the United States. But he said after the war was over, he said they settled down and they decided that it was time for them to start to have a family. Well, they tried to have a family, tried to have children and stuff, and they had no luck. And he said, finally, both he and his wife went to the doctors to see what was the problem or see if there was a problem that would prevent them from having children. And he said that his wife suffered from not a disease, but physical problems that would prevent her from having children. So he said they were kind of downtrodden. He said they were quite upset knowing that they would never have a family. We're debating whether or not they should adopt somebody or adopt a child or whatever. And he said it just got so that every time they would talk about it or whatever, they would just get in a fight. So he said they decided to just set it aside and wait for about 6 months or so to see and talk about it again. So one thing they did do is he said they did start to pray for Father Capon's intercession. And he said that he would pray for Father Capon's intercession, asking that he pray that they might have a child. So they were doing that. Well, about 6 months after these events took place, his wife got sick. Margaret got sick, and she had the flu, and she just couldn't get over it. And so then after a while, Osra started having flu symptoms and stuff also. And he said they're always sick to the stomach, nauseous, all the things that, you know, that go along with having the flu. So he said they finally went to the doctor. So the doctor was doing tests, and he said that they came back to hear the results from the test. And the doctor said, well, he said that he had some bad news and some good news. And he looked at Osra, and he said to Osra, he said, I have no idea why you're sick. He said, I don't see anything wrong with you. He said, as far as I can tell, you're just crazy or something like that. But he said, he looked at that Margaret, and he said, for you, he said, you don't have the flu. He said, what you're doing is having morning sickness. And she was pregnant.
How about that?
And so he looked back at Osra, and he said, I don't know if you're having sympathy or whatever with your wife for being pregnant or whatever, but he said, get over it. He said, you shouldn't be sick at all. So anyway, so Margaret was pregnant with their first child. They wound up having three children. Each time they had a child, they prayed for Father Capon's intercession. With their third child, it was a difficult pregnancy. And after that pregnancy, they had to do a hysterectomy, and the doctor called them both back into his office, and he said, I want you to sit down. And he said to both Margaret and Osra, he said, I want you to understand that each and every one of your children are a miracle. And he said to Margaret, he said, Margaret, you still have the physical problems that you had when you first came to me. And he said, it is still impossible for you to get pregnant. So he said, I believe every one of your children is a miracle. Because
wow.
He said, it's physically impossible for you to get pregnant. So
good.
They attributed all of the children as miracles to Father Capon. And of course, when I found out about this, I thought, well, this is great. We have our first miracle. But unfortunately, the hospital that all the children were born in had burnt down,
so
they had lost all their records there. The doctor was long since dead, so all of those records and stuff were by the wayside also. So it was just something that we had never been able to prove. But it's also, their firm belief is that Father Capon prayed for and was able to. Through his intercession, bring about these miracle children.
Very good.
And I will say, there's been several people that have talked to us or that have come to us with us going through the investigation of Father Capon's life. Several people that I know that have had difficulty getting pregnant or difficult pregnancies where they have prayed for Father Capon's intercession, and they either wound up being able to conceive and have a child, or they were able to get through the difficult pregnancy with a healthy child. Oftentimes I encourage people that are wanting to have a family and wanting to start a family to pray for Father Capon's intercession, just because of the history of people that I know that have prayed for his intercession and for asking for help for their pregnancy.
Very good. We kind of zip past the bottom of the hour, but we do have to take a break, Father, take care of some business, so give you a chance to wet your whistle. And when we come back, maybe we can pick up when Father Emil headed over to Korea. For our listeners, our guest is a great storyteller in Father John Hotze. He comes to us from Kansas, and we've been discussing the life of Father Emil Capon. You're not going to want to miss the rest of the story. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Pat Lally. I have been a faithful listener of In His Sign for almost 9 years. So it is with much gratitude and appreciation in my heart that I reflect on how my life has been blessed through this beautiful anointed ministry. I personally have been the recipient of many answered prayers and healings, not only for myself, but also family and friends. You have been called, Kathleen, to speak all over the world, and wherever God sends you, the Holy Spirit uses you in amazing ways to touch the hearts and lives of God's hurting people through your extraordinary gift of healing. God bless you, Kathleen.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic Radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry, to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906. Or visit our website at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. And again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. It's kept us on the air for over 40 years now and allows us to bring you great shows like today's. And our guest today has been Father John Hotze, and we're talking about a great priest in Father Emil Capon, who's in the midst of his canonization process now. I believe, Father, that there's a website that people can visit to learn more about Father Capon. I see there's merchandise and everything else available, the books, I guess, of his life and various materials.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's... Yep. FatherCapon.org?
It's www.FatherCapon. It's just FRKAPAUN.org.
Right,
that's it. Or if you don't go through it there, it's also linked to our diocesan website at the Catholic Diocese of Wichita.org. So.
Very good. I want to make sure we get it in there and make sure we get it in at the end, too, so people can reference it. So before we went to the break, we were talking about Father Capon, and he had spent some time in Burma and India, comes back as a parish priest, originally in his home parish, and then, like you said, out in Timken, and then gets back involved with the military down in Texas. And from there, where would he go?
From there, he goes to Japan. This was right at the time that the Korean War was breaking out, and he went to from Fort Bliss. He went up to Washington State, and from Washington State, they departed to go to Japan. And there, Japan, they grouped it together and eventually would be sent over into Korea for the when the war broke out there. A couple things that happened while he was there in Japan. We have numerous stories from some of the military men about Father Kapon baptizing them or making sure that they received the sacraments. Again, when they were there, most of it was just training for the troops. And Father Kapon was always there with them at the training. I mean, he would be out there on the fields biovacking with the men, again, proving that he was that soldier's chaplain. Other soldiers and stuff talked about how boring it was, that it was just these training sessions that would go on for days and whatever. But he said Father Kapon was always there with him, was always there to help him out. From Japan, they went over into Korea. In Korea, I don't really want to get into the history of Korea, but Korea had been kind of other people, other nations ruled Korea for about the previous 30 years. I mean, back in the early 1900s, they were ruled by China or by Japan. So they had little infrastructure for their own government. After the Korean War, after World War II, the country was kind of divided into the southern half, kind of placed in the care of the United States, Great Britain, and France, the northern half in the care of Russia. So that's how the country was kind of divided up. They wanted Korea to ultimately, they were hoping Korea would ultimately be reunited one day, which is what the Koreans wanted also. South Koreans, of course, wanted it to be free and a democratic republic, and North Korea was under the auspices of the communism. So there they wanted it reunited, but under communist rule. Because of that, North Korea attacked South Korea. Like I say, South Korea had little infrastructure for their own government or whatever, so North Korea had a relatively easy time of coming in and taking over almost all of the peninsula of Korea. At the time, the United States and other United Nations forces got involved in the war. There was only a small area in the southeastern corner of the peninsula that was still under the South Korean control. But the United Nations forces came in, 22 nations, which included the United States, which was the bulk of it. And they came in and they were able to push the North Koreans back. North Koreans were not expecting it. So again, they had a relatively easy time of pushing the North Koreans back. Everybody was expecting that the war would be over by Christmas. But when they got to that 38th parallel, where the line of demarcation between North Korea and South Korea, the United Nations forces had a decision to make as to whether or not to go on north. And they did decide that they would go north and they would have a kind of a buffer zone between North Korea and South Korea, so they would not have to worry about South Korea being invaded again. But as soon as they passed this 38th parallel, unbeknownst to the United Nations forces, the Chinese had agreed to step in and help out the North Koreans. Army intelligence had said that there may have been a few thousand troops, Chinese troops, already in North Korea. So when they went to the north, past this 38th parallel, they were not worried about it too much. Well, as it turned out, there wasn't just a couple thousand, but there were some people estimate up to 300,000 Chinese troops in Korea, or in Northern Korea, I mean, hiding in the mountainous regions and things. So when they passed that 38th parallel, much of the United Nations forces found themselves being surrounded by Chinese and North Koreans, the Chinese just getting into the war. That's exactly where Father Kapon found himself. They were being surrounded. they were given the order or directives that they needed to flee to the south and make it to safety as quick as they could. Father Capon and a Captain Anderson, who was a physician, both said that they were going to stay back to help the wounded. So it was because he was staying back to help the wounded that he was actually captured. When he was captured, he had kind of commandeered a dugout, a little dugout, and what he was doing was going out and pulling the wounded off of the battlefield and bringing them into this foxhole dugout type thing. And it was kind of a crescent-shaped dugout or foxhole. And so he's bringing them all into one end of this foxhole. Well, the North Koreans and Chinese saw what he was doing, so they started to throw grenades into this foxhole. Father Capon knew that if they continued to do that, that ultimately the grenades would start getting to where the wounded were. As it had been, since like it was a crescent shape, they were able to throw grenades into one end of it, but the wounded were at the other end. So at first they were in relative safety, but as they got closer, they could get closer to the wounded. One of those that was brought into this foxhole was a Chinese officer that had been wounded. So Father Capon made this Chinese officer stand up and stop throwing the grenades in the foxhole and kind of arrange a surrender just so the wounded would be able to live. They knew that the wounded were, that if the Chinese and the North Koreans would not take prisoners that were wounded because it was their intention that they would be marched to prisoner war camps. If they couldn't march, they were just killed. So that was what Father Capon was afraid of, was that they would all just be gunned down. So through his work or through his intercession and forcing this Chinese officer to let them surrender, then the lives of the wounded were saved. So that was his first kind of heroic action there, in addition to going out and pulling men off the field and things like that. So from there, they were marched to what was called the Simbokhol Valley, which is a valley, like a four-mile-long valley that was by the town of Simbokhol. And that's where they gathered the prisoners of war. And they gathered everybody there, and then from there they marched into the north to the prisoner of war camps. Temperatures that year were between 30 and 40 below zero. They said that it was the coldest winter on record for like the past 150 years. Again, the United Nations troops did not have any winter clothing. Again, they were thinking that the war would be over by Christmas time, so they were not issued winter clothes yet. So those that were captured just had their summer clothes on, or their summer uniforms. One of the first things that the Chinese and North Koreans did when they captured them was take their shoes, because their shoes were so much better than what the Chinese and North Koreans did. So many of them did not have shoes. What they had for shoes were whatever fabric or whatever they could wrap around their feet, and that was all they had for shoes. Well, they would make them march to the north, to these prison camps, at night, because they did not want them to know that they did not want the United Nations forces or the United States to know that they had these prisoners. So not only was it 30 to 40 degrees below zero, winds coming off of Siberia down the peninsula, but they didn't have any winter clothes, and most of them were without shoes. So many of them died. In prison camp number 5, which is where Father Capon was put, they know that they interred about 3,000 men there in that prison camp. During that first winter, almost 1,600 of them froze to death. When you look at it and you look at the statistics with prison camps during the Korean War and prison camps during World War II, death rate of American prisoners in German prisoner war camps during World War II was about 21-22%. Death rates in Japanese prisoner war camps during the Second World War, death rate of American prisoners was about 35%, 35, 36%. Death rates of American prisoners during the Korean War in the Korean War or in the Korean POW camps was 60%. So you see the difference. I mean, sure. most of those that died because they froze to death. The men would tell me about how they would go to sleep at night, or one man was saying, he said, you know, I went to sleep. The huts that they put them in were huts that were generally about 14 feet by, or no, were about 9 feet by 9 feet. They were just mud huts, and they would put in like 14 or 15 men in each and every one of these huts. No furniture or anything, no heat, no water, no anything in these huts. They said at night they would have to sleep head to toe just so that there would be space for them to be, for the men to be able to lay down. Well, one man was telling me, he said he got up in the morning, had to go out to the latrine, and he said he pushed with the guy on one side of him, and he said he was frozen. Mm. He said he pushed the guy on the other side of him, and he said he was dead too. He was frozen. And he said, then it struck me. He said, if it had not been for him sleeping in between these two guys, that he would have been dead, that he would have been one of the ones that was frozen. Wow. And many of the men found themselves in the same situation. One of the men was telling me, he said, when I tell you that they were frozen, he said, I don't mean that they just froze to death, but he said, when they were frozen solid. He said, we were told when there was somebody that had died because they had froze to death, he said, they would point to two men to carry them out. And he said, it was just like having to pick up a log. He said, they are just frozen solid. Wow. So he said, you put one shoulders on one on your shoulder and the other one put their feet on their shoulder. And he said, that's where you took them out, or how you took them out to be buried. It wasn't very long before all of the ground was frozen, so they couldn't bury him any longer. So they said that they just started to stack them on top of each other until the ground thawed out enough for them to bury men. And they said that this place where they were stacking the remains, one man was telling me, he said, by the time they were able to start burying people again, by the time the ground thawed out enough that they could bury people, he said, it was a pile, and he said it was about 100 yards long and about 4 feet high. That was just corpse, stacked on corpse, stacked on corpse. And he said there was just nothing you could do to combat the cold and combat the freezing. Yeah. Father Capon always volunteered to go out and to bury the dead, regardless of whether or not that they could actually bury him. And the reason that he did was because he would take their clothes and make sure that their clothes were used to give to other men, because if they hadn't, then they would be freezing also. They say that at one time that at the very beginning, when they were put in the prison camp, that he bartered with one of the soldiers or one of the guards, and that he had a watch, and he bartered with a soldier to give him a blanket, and he would give him his watch, and then from the watch, he took it and he made socks and stuff for the men. But he spent his time there in the POW camp trying to make sure the men had enough food so that they wouldn't starve, to make sure that they had some clothes, if any clothes were available. At night, he would break out of the officers' unit. They had the officers separated from the enlisted men. Father Capon would break into the enlisted men's area, and they said that he would go from hut to hut to help the men, or to make sure the men were taken care of. They said that he had a sleeve of a sweatshirt that he would pull down over his head to use as a hat, and he would pull his collar up. And so they said that you could just see his eyes, and that he would sneak from their hut from one hut to the next. He would go into the first hut, and they said first he would check with the men to see how they were doing. As he would be checking with them, he would see if any of them needed medical attention, so he could make sure that doctors or physicians that were also captives could come and visit them to take care of them. They said if he had any food, he would take pack his pockets with food to give what food he could. And then they said that he had a pipe, and he would take his pipe and put some tobacco in it, and he would take a puff and pass it around so that everybody could take a puff of his pipe. And then before he would leave, he would ask them if they would want to pray. And one man was telling me, he said, Father, he said, it did not matter. He said there were Muslims. He said there were Protestants. He said there were Jews. He said it did not matter who you were, atheist, whatever. He said everybody prayed with Father Capon.
Very good.
He said he was a man of prayer and he was a man of hope. And he was passing that on to him, and he did it mostly with his prayer.
Very good. Father, listen, I don't mean to interrupt, but we have just about 3 minutes left. And
all right.
We could probably go for another hour. But
probably so.
Yeah. But so the marvelous work that he did with those that were still surviving in camp, but eventually he would struggle with some health issues himself.
Right. Yep. Yep. He ultimately died. I mean, he had pneumonia. He had dysentery. He had a blood clot in his leg. He had an infected eye and malnourished. And he just eventually gave his life for others is literally what he did.
Amen. And so he would pass, and of course, folks back home would hear the stories that he of what he had done, how heroic he was when he was there. What triggered the process to get him started for canonization?
Actually, right after the war, his fellow POWs came out, and they were calling upon the church to canonize him. They were calling upon the government for him to receive the Medal of Honor. He received the Medal of Honor in 2013, and now we're working to see that he is canonized a saint, God willing.
And one of the things that I just read before we got started today was that they were able to identify his remains, and they actually made their way
right. Eventually
back to Kansas.
Right. Yeah. His remains were identified last year. And he was interred in the cathedral here in Wichita. So for those that would like to visit, they can certainly come and visit his tomb here in the cathedral. They have a small museum up in Pilsen, Kansas, where he grew up. Both places are very very worthwhile for a trip if you'd like to make a pilgrimage for Father Capon. Every year, the first Sunday in June, we have what's Father Capon's Day, because it's the closest day to the day that he passed away. That was not Memorial Day. He died on May 23rd. And then the other day is on the Veterans Day, November 11th. The military has a pilgrimage to Pilsen also. So both of those days are days of celebration here in Kansas for the Diocese of Wichita for Father Capon.
Very good. Again, our guest today has been Father John Hotze. And Father, I know before we got started, I said I didn't know if we'd have enough material for the hour. And we probably could have booked a couple hours. You're a great story.
That's right.
Nah, but you're a great storyteller, and we love to hear about these people that we never would have known of if you hadn't come on the radio with us. So I can't thank you enough for taking the time.
Well, I'm glad to be here. So thank you for allowing me to talk.
Very good. And again, the website is fathercapon.org. That's FRKAPAUN.org. You can learn all about Father. There's books available and what have you. And also donate towards helping them with the cause for canonization. So, Father John Hotze, thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. I certainly appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
All right. God bless you.
Appreciate you also.
Okay.
And you too. Bye.
Bye-bye now. So, for our listeners, a lot of times I don't get to talk to the guests until 30 seconds before we come on, and never know if we're going to get 15 minutes or 60 minutes, and fortunately, 60 minutes of great storytelling about Father Capon, and I'm already running past 6 o'clock. So I look forward to being with you again next week. Until then, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care, and God bless.